Part 3, Section A. When upholding the constitutionality of the coverage formula in 1966, we concluded that it was rational in both practice and theory. The formula looked to cause, discriminatory tests, and effect, low voter registration and turnout, and tailored the remedy, preclearance, to those jurisdictions exhibiting both. By 2009, however, we concluded that the coverage formula raised serious constitutional questions. As we explained, a statute's current burdens must be justified by current needs, and any disparate geographic coverage must be sufficiently related to the problem that it targets. The coverage formula met that test in 1965, but no longer does so. Coverage today is based on decades-old data and eradicated practices. The formula captures states by reference to literacy tests and low voter registration and turnout in the 1960s and early 1970s. But such tests have been banned nationwide for over 40 years. And voter registration and turnout numbers in the covered states have risen dramatically in the years since. Racial disparity in those numbers was compelling evidence justifying the preclearance remedy and the coverage formula. There is no longer such a disparity. In 1965, the states could be divided into two groups: those with a recent history of voting tests and low voter registration and turnout, and those without those characteristics. Congress based its coverage formula on that distinction. Today, the nation is no longer divided along those lines, yet the Voting Rights Act continues to treat it as if it were. Section B. The government's defense of the formula is limited. First, the government contends that the formula is reverse-engineered. Congress identified the jurisdictions to be covered and then came up with the criteria to describe them. Under that reasoning, there need not be any logical relationship between the criteria in the formula and the reason for coverage. All that is necessary is that the formula happened to capture the jurisdictions Congress wanted to single out. The government suggests that Katzenbach sanctioned such an approach, but the analysis in Katzenbach was quite different. Katzenbach reasoned that the coverage formula was rational because the formula was relevant to the problem. Tests and devices are relevant to voting discrimination because of their long history as a tool for perpetrating the evil. A low voting rate is pertinent for the obvious reason that widespread disenfranchisement must inevitably affect the number of actual voters. Here, by contrast, the government's reverse engineering argument does not even attempt to demonstrate the continued relevance of the formula to the problem it targets. And in the context of a decision as significant as this one, subjecting a disfavored subset of states to extraordinary legislation otherwise unfamiliar to our federal system, that failure to establish even relevance is fatal. The government falls back to the argument that because the formula was relevant in 1965, its continued use is permissible so long as any discrimination remains in the states Congress identified back then, regardless of how that discrimination compares to discrimination in states unburdened by coverage. This argument does not look to current political conditions, but instead relies on a comparison between the states in 1965. That comparison reflected the different histories of the North and South. It was in the South that slavery was upheld by law until uprooted by the Civil War, that the reign of Jim Crow denied African Americans the most basic freedoms, and that state and local governments worked tirelessly to disenfranchise citizens on the basis of race. The court invoked that history, rightly so, in sustaining the disparate coverage of the Voting Rights Act in 1966. But history did not end in 1965. By the time the Act was reauthorized in 2006, there had been 40 more years of it. In assessing the current need for a preclearance system that treats states differently from one another today, that history cannot be ignored. During that time, largely because of the Voting Rights Act, voting tests were abolished, disparities in voter registration and turnout due to race were erased, and African Americans attained political office in record numbers. And yet, the coverage formula that Congress reauthorized in 2006 ignores these developments, keeping the focus on decades-old data relevant to decades-old problems, rather than current data reflecting current needs. The 15th Amendment commands that the right to vote shall not be denied or abridged on account of race or color, and it gives Congress the power to enforce that command. The amendment is not designed to punish for the past. Its purpose is to ensure a better future. Consistent with the design of the Constitution, the 15th Amendment is cast in fundamental terms, terms transcending the particular controversy which was the immediate impetus for its enactment. To serve that purpose, Congress, if it is to divide the states, must identify those jurisdictions to be singled out on a basis that makes sense in light of current conditions. It cannot simply rely on the past. We made that clear in Northwest Austin, and we make it clear again today. Section C. In defending the coverage formula, the government, the interveners, and the dissent also rely heavily on data from the record that they claim justify disparate coverage. Congress compiled thousands of pages of evidence before reauthorizing the Voting Rights Act. The court below and the parties have debated what that record shows. They have gone back and forth about whether to compare covered to non-covered jurisdictions as blocks, how to disaggregate the data state by state, how to weigh Section 2 cases as evidence of ongoing discrimination, and whether to consider evidence not before Congress, among other issues. Regardless of how to look at the record, however, no one can fairly say that it shows anything approaching the pervasive, flagrant, widespread, and rampant discrimination that faced Congress in 1965, and that clearly distinguished the covered jurisdictions from the rest of the nation at that time. But a more fundamental problem remains. Congress did not use the record it compiled to shape a coverage formula grounded in current conditions. It instead reenacted a formula based on 40-year-old facts, having no logical relation to the present day. The dissent relies on second-generation barriers, which are not impediments to the casting of ballots, but rather electoral arrangements that affect the weight of minority votes. That does not cure the problem. Viewing the preclearance requirements as targeting such efforts simply highlights the irrationality of continued reliance on the Section 4 coverage formula, which is based on voting tests and access to the ballot, not vote dilution. We cannot pretend that we are reviewing an updated statute or try our hand at updating the statute ourselves based on the new record compiled by Congress. Contrary to the dissent's contention, we are not ignoring the record. We are simply recognizing that it played no role in shaping the statutory formula before us today. The dissent also turns to the record to argue that, in light of voting discrimination in Shelby County, the county cannot complain about the provisions that subject it to preclearance. But that is like saying that a driver pulled over pursuant to a policy of stopping all redheads cannot complain about that policy if it turns out his license has expired. Shelby County's claim is that the coverage formula here is unconstitutional in all of its applications because of how it selects the jurisdictions subjected to preclearance. The county was selected based on that formula and may challenge it in court. Section D. The dissent proceeds from a flawed premise. It quotes the famous sentence from McCulloch versus Maryland with the following emphasis. Let the end be legitimate, let it be within the scope of the Constitution, and all means which are appropriate, which are plainly adapted to that end, which are not prohibited, but consist with the letter and spirit of the Constitution, are constitutional. But this case is about a part of the sentence that the dissent does not emphasize, the part that asks whether a legislative means is consistent with the letter and spirit of the Constitution. The dissent states that it cannot tenably be maintained that this is an issue with regard to the Voting Rights Act, but 4 years ago, in an opinion joined by two of today's dissenters, the court expressly stated that the Act's preclearance requirement and its coverage formula raise serious constitutional questions. The dissent does not explain how those serious constitutional questions became untenable in 4 short years. The dissent treats the Act as if it were just like any other piece of legislation. But this Court has made clear from the beginning that the Voting Rights Act is far from ordinary. At the risk of repetition, Katzenbach indicated that the Act was uncommon and not otherwise appropriate, but was justified by exceptional and unique conditions. Multiple decisions since have reaffirmed the act's extraordinary nature. Yet the dissent goes so far as to suggest that the preclearance requirement and disparate treatment of the states should be upheld into the future, unless there is no or almost no evidence of unconstitutional action by states. In other ways as well, the dissent analyzes the question presented as if our decision in Northwest Austin never happened. For example, the dissent refuses to consider the principle of equal sovereignty, despite Northwest Austin's emphasis on its significance. Northwest Austin also emphasized the dramatic progress since 1965, but the dissent describes current levels of discrimination as flagrant, widespread, and pervasive. Despite the fact that Northwest Austin requires an act's disparate geographic coverage to be sufficiently related to its targeted problems, the dissent maintains that an act's limited coverage actually eases Congress's burdens and suggests that a fortuitous relationship should suffice. Although Northwest Austin stated definitively that current burdens must be justified by current needs, the dissent argues that the coverage formula can be justified by history and that the required showing can be weaker on reenactment than when the law was first passed. There is no valid reason to insulate the coverage formula from review merely because it was previously enacted 40 years ago. If Congress had started from scratch in 2006, it plainly could not have enacted the present coverage formula. It would have been irrational for Congress to distinguish between states in such a fundamental way based on 40-year-old data, when today's statistics tell an entirely different story. And it would have been irrational to base coverage on the use of voting tests 40 years ago, when such tests have been illegal since that time. But that is exactly what Congress has done. Striking down an act of Congress is the gravest and most delicate duty that this Court is called on to perform. We do not do so lightly. That is why, in 2009, we took care to avoid ruling on the constitutionality of the Voting Rights Act when asked to do so, and instead resolved the case then before us on statutory grounds. But in issuing that decision, we expressed our broader concerns about the constitutionality of the Act. Congress could have updated the coverage formula at that time, but did not do so. Its failure to act leaves us today with no choice but to declare Section 4B unconstitutional. The formula in that section can no longer be used as a basis for subjecting jurisdictions to preclearance. Our decision in no way affects the permanent nationwide ban on racial discrimination in voting found in Section 2. We issue no holding on Section 5 itself, only on the coverage formula. Congress may draft another formula based on current conditions. Such a formula is an initial prerequisite to a determination that exceptional conditions still exist, justifying such an extraordinary departure from the traditional course of relations between the states and the federal government. Our country has changed, and while any racial discrimination in voting is too much, Congress must ensure that the legislation it passes to remedy that problem speaks to current conditions. The judgment of the Court of Appeals is reversed. It is so ordered.